is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
This is a special report from ABC News. I'm Richard Cantu. The National Transportation Safety Board announced the cockpit voice and flight data recorders from the American Airlines jet that was hit by an Army helicopter over Washington, D.C.'s Reagan National Airport have been recovered. ABC News aviation analyst John Nance.
The black boxes, which are actually orange, will give us a very clear picture, hopefully, of what happened in terms of verbalization in the cockpit in the jet. As far as the other one, the flight data recorder, that's going to give us about 350 channels of digital information about all the things that were happening to the jet. So it'll give us a precise location of where it was, what the attitude was.
The Army helicopter had a recorder aboard as well.
So the Black Hawk, I believe they have a flight data recorder. We don't believe they have a cockpit voice recorder, but that's still going to help, especially in putting together the flight dynamics of how one machine intersected the other, exactly at what altitude and what airspeed.
This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
The Badgers stunned in Maryland. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Men's basketball, the number 17th ranked Badgers, ran into a buzzsaw, losing on the road at Maryland, 76-68. The Terrapins have now won six of their last seven games. The Badgers have lost two of their last three. Greg Gard asked, why does it seem as teams always seem to go into a slump this time of the year?
I don't worry about other years, Mike. On to the next game. We got to get ready for Northwestern, making sure we keep getting better.
They play the Wildcats Saturday afternoon at 1 in Evanston. The Badgers women's team, with an 82-75 upset win at home over Michigan, head coach Marissa Mosley responding to allegations from former player Tess Towers that she was wrongfully accused of fighting during a practice, left behind on a team trip, and mistreated by the coaching staff.
I have fully participated in the university's procedures in regard to this matter. I feel like at this time, I think that that's all that really needs to be said.
That's the Badger women's head coach, Marissa Mosley, with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba.
Where are you at with dome stadiums?
Oh, love them. Snow games are awesome, but it's also a risk of injuries and everything.
Give me a dome anytime. I don't want to see elite athletes running on snow like it's me playing out there and tripping and slipping. I want to watch those guys run. I want the receivers to run and catch their passes. I want to see great athletes being great athletes.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about on Tuesday. Donald Trump thought it was a great idea to, we're going to freeze federal spending. Never mind that, you know, Congress passed a law and the president signed it. It's better never mind that the power of the purse is with Congress. Never mind. We're going to freeze free spending, everything across the board. And when people started saying, hey, that's not going to help the economy. That's going to be pretty bad. That's going to hurt especially poor people, especially children. When the message was Trump is literally taking children's food from their mouths and working on giving it to Elon Musk so that Musk can have a massive return on his Trump investment. It's one of those things where you go, bad messaging. So they started scrambling, going, no, we don't mean that stuff. No, we mean transgender stuff or whatever the excuse was, whatever their justification. And understand, it's about chaos. It's about, you know, throwing as much stuff out and so much misdirection so you don't know what to look at. And you don't know what's true. This is the world of total disinformation and misinformation and, of course, just insanity. Now, understand, we said this is how it was going to be. I told you this was going to happen. Told you this is who they are. In fact, they said, this is the thing. Don't even worry about me. Republicans were telling you, this is what's going to happen. This is what it is. They wrote it down. It was Project 2025. And yet, most of us didn't listen. So when someone said to me that they're literally taking food out of the mouths of children, I said, yeah, they said they were going to do it. Page 302 of Project 2025. That's return to the original purpose of school meals. That was just for the poorest of the poor kids, not for all kids, because, of course, we want to shame those poor kids because that shame helps them work harder, of course. But they, in Project 2025, said that the federal meal program for K through 12 students were created to provide food for children from low-income families while at school. Today, however, federal school meals increasingly resemble entitlement programs that have strayed far from their original objective and represent an example of the ever-expanding federal footprint in local school operations. Yes, putting food in front of children so that they can have a meal. That is the creeping footprint of the federal giant. I just don't know where to go with that. If you believe that putting food in front of children, me when I was a child, without shaming, without separate lines, without the kind of attachments that came with it, I don't know what to do with you. This is a moment where, you know, these are dividing issues. If you have a problem spending money to help feed children, and then tell me that you're a Christian, I have a real problem with that. And if you tell me that, no, Donald Trump wouldn't do that, even though it was written down, and then tell me, well, he disavowed Project 2025, and then he's doing it, I don't know what to do to help you. When you see House Budget Chair Jody Arrington circulating a memo with $5.7 trillion in cuts, most of them to our safety net programs, most of them for low-income and working-class people, under the guise of we're saving the programs. Yeah, I guess we're saving them for somebody else, not the people who need it. And this is kind of one of those days where my mind is in this fog space of being slapped with the fire hose that is Trump misinformation. This is exactly who Donald Trump is. This is exactly what the plan, I believe, is. It's to cause all of this chaos. And Musk said it during the campaign. There's going to be suffering. There's going to be pain. There's going to have to be sacrifice. When a guy who's worth $500 billion tells you that you need to sacrifice, we buy it, we got problems. Now, as I've been saying all along, the solutions will come out of their savagery. The more of this they do, the more that they cause, the more pain, the more suffering, the more chaos, the more, just uncertainty of what tomorrow is going to bring, the more people are going to, I hope, begin to repel in a way that says, no, this isn't who we are. And I said this the other day. I'm hoping, but I'm not 100% sure. We also see Trump right now simultaneously because, evidently, it's easy to cause chaos. And this goes back to something my grandfather always said. Any idiot with a hammer can tear down a house. It takes a craftsman to build one. And what Trump is basically doing is he's the idiot with the hammer. He's tearing down our government. He's tearing down this country. He's tearing down an economy that was moving in a reasonably good direction. It takes someone who actually has some skill to build. And Trump has always been that predator. He's always been that parasite. And are we surprised now that he's doing what he's... No, I'm not. In fact, I'm not surprised that now he's going to court trying to argue that he is basically immune from anything with E. Jean Carroll. Is not going to have to pay her any of the damages because he insulted her and did all the things that he did. And because he's saying... that Supreme Court decision that gives him substantial criminal immunity should extend to defamation lawsuits as well. And look, understand, he knows exactly what that Supreme Court decision has afforded him. It's given him what Nixon believed, that if the president does it, it's not illegal because the president is above the law. And that's the thinking that Donald Trump has. So him freezing the federal spending, do you think he didn't know that that was going to be stopped? You don't think that everyone around him knew that he can't do it? Of course they did. But they did it anyway because they wanted to get people all worked up. They wanted people doing what my friends did to me today. They called and said, hey, are they really going to take my kids' school lunch program? Hey, are they really cutting off Medicaid where a lot of kids get their health insurance? Are they really doing that? And I'm like, one, wait. All you can do is wait to see if it happens. And then two, remember it. Because this is why elections matter. Elections have consequences. We're going to have an election in 2 years. And the more of this craziness that goes on, the more I hope we as a working class in this country come together around the idea that we want better. Trump and company believe that their policies, what they're doing to the federal government, the assaults on our government, the assaults on the safety net programs, the assaults on everything that the 20th century brought us, is somehow going to give them a ruling majority for the next 100 years. They've already said that. An FDR-like kind of power. The problem is FDR made people's lives better, and he did it by giving workers the ability to unionize and to organize and the fight for better wages, hours, conditions. He did it by setting a minimum wage law, a maximum hour law. He did it by ending child labor laws. He did it by making people's lives better. What Trump is doing, sorry, this isn't leading us to that better land. This is chaos for chaos' sake to meet their agenda. And their agenda is to break the federal government so they can privatize and profitize and they can rob us blind. All the while taking all of the tools away from us to fight back. Also, they fired the general counsel of the NLRB, Jennifer Abruzzo, and one of the board members. Now, here's the thing. You may remember in November of 2024, you had Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, and the Trader Joe's guys who sued the NLRB saying it was unconstitutional. January 20th, of this year, you had Bezos and Musk standing on stage with Trump, watching over their investment, looking for their return on investment. And here we are a little over a week later. Trump dismantles the National Labor Relations Board. By chance, by accident, or, hey, you gave me some money. A little quid pro quo. Now, I'm sure my union brothers and sisters, they... No, Donald Trump would never do that. Our union's going to be strong. As union density fell to single digits now. 9.9% union density in this country. We're almost to the point to where it was illegal to join a union. We're almost to that point in the private sector. Again, the things that are going to help us, the ability to collectively bargain and fight for better wages, hours, conditions. Exactly what Trump and company are dismantling. When they talk about big labor, you're talking about a single digit of the workforce. And that is too much. They're afraid of even that much power for working people. Again, as my grandfather always said, if a rich guy's going to spend a buck to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it. We better be spending a lot of time, energy, and capital to organize, to unionize, to come together and collectively act. That simple. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back with AFT's President Randy Weingarten.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we're being continually assaulted by the fire hose of executive orders and Trump misdirection, the one thing very, very clear is that the GOP, they've got our children in their sights, whether it's school lunches, identity, legal status. War has been waged in our schools, classrooms, teachers, and yes, our kids are at the front of it. And here to share some thoughts on all of the fire hose of chaos and insanity, I've asked my good friend Randy Weingarten to come share some thoughts. Randy's the president of the American Federation of Teachers, aft.org, the website. Randy, thanks for taking time for us.
Of course, Rick.
So where do we start with the fire hose of crazy? Let's start with the federal freeze. Trump knows he can't do it, going to do it anyway. Judge temporarily stopped it. How would that affect kids in the classroom, school lunch programs? How's that going to affect families?
Well, it's draconian and it's catastrophic and it's chaotic and it's cruel. And so I want to just take a step back, which is, you know, Trump said throughout his campaign to working people in America, let's forget for a second his billionaires, his billionaire friends who are on stage with him. Let's just say the other folks. He said, trust me, I'm going to do what I can to drive down prices and to make your life better.
Right.
So in the first 9 or 10 days, what he's done is he scared the bejesus, not only of immigrants, but of every family in America by rescinding the policy that says that ICE cannot go into schools or churches or hospitals. Rescinds that. Basically, families are like, oh my God, what's going to happen to my kids' friends? What's going to happen to the family that's right next door? What's going to happen to my grandmother? Because nobody knows what it means right now. Nobody knows if you had, you know, papers one day, what does that mean the next day? And then on top of all of that, on top of the immigration fear, now you have in Oklahoma, for the first time ever, somebody's going to say, what's your immigration status? The last time that happened was was years and years ago in places that don't have freedom. And then on top of that, this week, we're cutting NIH grants for cancer, National Science Foundation grants to study and research other things. And then on top of that, now we're just cutting everything. Food services, Medicaid, all the other things that the federal government provides. So how is any of this helpful to working people and to families? It feels like it's just chaos that is cascading and cascading and cascading. So today, a lot of us went into court. A federal judge said, hold on, you can't really do this. These programs have been appropriated by Congress, signed by the last president. You can't do this. But this is the kind of chaos that is not helpful to people who are just trying to raise a family and have opportunity. Yeah.
Well, I think Trump said it, you know, day one he was going to be a dictator, and all of us knew that wasn't going to end on day one. This is that kind of stuff.
This is that kind of, but, you know, this is that kind of chaos. It's actually worse, Rick, because, you know, he can't, this is, dictators are not normally this chaotic. But all I'm saying is, yeah, it's not helpful to the working people of this country who want to have a better life.
Yeah, this isn't getting you, this isn't getting you 99 cent eggs, is it?
No, it's not getting you 99. In fact, egg prices are going up. Now we got a tuberculosis outbreak in Kansas. We don't really know what's going on with bird flu because the CDC website is now shut down. And then on top of everything else, we have no idea what's going on with Wall Street because of, you know, what's going on in China. So it feels like a very chaotic beginning of this administration. It doesn't feel like I'm taking care of things. It feels really chaotic.
So let me ask you the question then, because I view this as on purpose. I view this as part of their strategy. This isn't just because, at least I don't think this is just because he woke up today and go, hey, let's just do that. I think this is part of a much bigger strategy. I think this is incorporated with Project 2025 and all of the advisors that he has around him to cause this kind of mass distraction, this kind of this busy work for people to pay attention to while they're doing a whole lot of things that aren't going to get as much attention. For instance, like firing the general counsel of the NLRB and one of the board members of the NLRB. That didn't get a lot of press because we're focused on, hey, we're taking food out of the mouths of children.
Well, look, let me just say this. I'm not going to spend any time trying to figure out why they're doing what they're doing. I mean, I'm going to spend a lot of time trying to figure out how we stop this chaos and cruelty from happening to regular people.
Right.
And that's frankly, you know, that's frankly what I'm going to devote my time to. I am not a shrink. I don't know why Donald Trump does what he does. It does appear like this is that playbook of Project 2025, which really wants to get rid of all of government and basically have, you know, the wild, wild west again, which is what we had in the Gilded Age, which gave us the first huge depression in the United States in the 20s and the 30s. But, you know, whatever it is, it's just wrong. And it is really hurting people. It's hurting. I saw some examples, for example, this week, somebody who was getting cancer treatments, experimental cancer treatments, that all of a sudden were cut because the NIH grants were cut. Yeah. And then it was put back. Today, is Head Start cut? Is it not cut? Is the portal open? Is the portal closed? How is that helping a parent who desperately needs her kid to be in Head Start that day because she's working? So all I'm saying is that whatever, you know, this is, it's not helping working people. It's actually made things worse because how unsettled people right now are.
No, I absolutely agree. But, you know, part of the, as you're laying this stuff out, part of that plays into the Republican ideology of government doesn't work, government's broken, government shouldn't do anything. This is part of that as well.
Right, but it's under their watch. You know, normally they say it and then about a Democratic administration, but they now control all of it. So it's basically government was working 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Now it's not working. I mean, this is not, you know.
Yeah, but their base has never believed that.
Day-to-day stuff.
Their base always thinks government's broken, so it's not surprising. But, you know, for me, I've been saying for well over a year, and maybe you'll come along with me, that the solutions that we need are going to come out of their savagery. The suffering that will be caused because of their savagery. And I hate to see that people are going to suffer, but the only time this country ever unites is in a moment of crisis. And I see him causing the crisis that was very predictable all during the campaign. The fact that we didn't listen, we weren't paying attention, no one read Project 2025 because they told us they were going to do this. For me, maybe this is that moment where we're finally shaked awake by chaos and ultimately pain and suffering that gets our heads right.
Well, let me say it this way. I think it's, I've seen a whole bunch of people who have done this kind of, I told you so. I think that's really wrong.
I'm not doing the I told you so.
No. I know, but what I'm saying is our job is to fight to make things better. That's our job. To take out of this chaos, you're right, how you make things better. And to and frankly, they've made a whole bunch of choices already that's made things chaotic. Elon Musk said he was going to create the suffering, and he has. And this is the suffering of Project 2025. They can't sell a pig in a poke anymore because they've made it clear what they're trying to do. But we have to be the champions of the working class and the middle class. We got to protect kids. We gotta protect communities. So we have to actually both have the ideas about how to make things better and fight to make sure that they can't make things worse.
Right. And out of this, I believe, is an organizing campaign that can happen.
Yeah.
And not based on red hats or blue hats, but based on working class hats, hard hats. And I've said this for a long time. It's not about red or blue. It's not about a red hat or blue hat. It's about hard hats. It's about working people getting what they need. Because, look, the anger's real. We both know that.
Yeah.
But the solutions that Democrats didn't convey well enough during the election didn't hit home.
And frankly, we're probably not, you know, I mean, this, you could see how Joe Biden had turned the ship, but the ship hadn't been fully turned.
Right.
And it's hard to convince someone who can't afford $7.20 for, you know, a 12 eggs that the industrial policy that has brought manufacturing back and, you know, and is rebuilding the bridge in the neighborhood is going to help drive down those prices. And I think that it was so, but right now, price not being driven down by actually making things worse in terms of whether or not somebody who's poor doesn't have a Medicaid portal to go into right now today, or, you know, whose kid is in Head Start and doesn't know whether Head Start is open tomorrow or not, or the meal program has been canceled, or the Pell Grant has been canceled. I mean, all these different things are what the federal government helps subsidize for real folks. And it's all kind of in jeopardy today.
Well, no, look, at the end of the day, maybe this is a great educational opportunity, because I don't think most people understand what the federal government does and what our government does to fund programs and to help lend a helping hand in a lot of cases. Maybe this is a gift in disguise. Again, you know, there's going to be suffering. But at some point, maybe it wakes us up and says, hey, we need to be talking to each other. We need to be demanding things that we want as opposed to what's being shoved down our throats. Any thoughts?
Well, look, I think that I'm a school teacher, so anything is a teaching opportunity.
No.
But, you know, and it is about educating about the contrast. And look, government can be a lot more efficient, just like we have fought, you and I have talked about how many times, career tech ed and how we have hands-on learning in schools instead of testing, and how we try to have more services in and around schools to create safe and welcoming environments. You know, we've talked about how you make things better, but I do think you're right that the chaos here and the confusion here, this doesn't help people. People want a better life.
Yeah.
They want to build on and make better what they have, not make things worse.
Right there. Last line of questioning I got for you. Look, you're the president of one of the largest unions in the country. The teachers who are on the front lines of, sadly, on the front lines of defending our children instead of just being able to educate them. What are the marching orders that you're putting out? What are teachers going to do?
I'm glad you asked that question. So tomorrow, we just got off a meeting with all our leaders from across the country, put it on because of, you know, what just happened today. Because education is really important and talking to each other is really important. So tomorrow, we're going to ask our members all across the country to talk to their congresspeople to say, stop this. Stop this nonsense. Let's make things better. Don't make things worse. Don't confuse things. Don't create chaos. Don't actually say we're not spending money when the money's already been appropriated for things that are really important. Don't do this so you could, Donald Trump could one day get more tax cuts for billionaires. Stop the nonsense. Let's make sure we build on things. Don't make things worse.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Randy. I always love having you on. Appreciate the time and the thoughts. Good on you and the work that you guys are doing.
Thank you, Rick. Take care of yourself.
Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers. I want to hear your thoughts. What should we be doing in this moment of chaos? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
News from the center, WRCE. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A mostly cloudy sky tonight, a low near 30, and more sun and in the mid-40s for tomorrow. Some clouds on Saturday, high upper 30s, with some snow showers Saturday night. A mixture of sunshine and clouds into Sunday, highs upper 40s. It's 34 right now.
Matt Nair on air.
Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's political editor.
No court in the country came closer to overturning the 2020 election results than the conservative majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And we have Brad Schimmel, who's been siding with January 6 rioters. So if you want your vote to count going forward, show up and vote on April 1st. Let's channel that energy into the Wisconsin Supreme Court race.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Tuesday, President Trump fired National Labor Relations Board General Counsel Jennifer Abruzzo. And not shocking, it's one of those things I was telling was going to happen. And also fired a board member, Gwen Wilcox. And look, as I said at the top of the show, curious how, you know, last November you had Musk and Bezos suing the NLRB, saying it's unconstitutional on January 20th. You had Musk and Bezos shoulder to shoulder with Trump on that stage, watching over their investments. And then a week later, Trump dismantles the NLRB. You gotta think about it. These firings seem to be just a small little return on investment. And here to share some thoughts on this small little return on investment, I've asked Brent Booker to come talk with us. Brent is the general president of the Laborers International Union of North America, LIUNA. Brent, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick. I appreciate the opportunity.
So is it too far to say that, you know, maybe this is a bit of payback, or was this just ideologically going to happen regardless?
Who knows, right? I mean, here's what we do know. We do know that our members and working people can't get a hearing because there's not enough people on the NLRB right now. And I mean, the way you just introed it, you know, with some of the people that the president has surrounded himself and some of their agendas are not the agendas of working people in this country. They're certainly not the agendas of the people I represent. And I get politics, I get firing the general counsel, in the first week. But eliminating a board position so that you can't hear cases without a plan to put somebody else in so that we just don't have the opportunity to have a hearing is alarming. And look, I want to make sure that our members, that people who want to organize in a union, you know, have the ability that when employers, big business, bosses mistreat workers, they got a place to go to. And right now they don't. And I hope that the president appoints somebody that's got a workers first mentality as soon as possible, so that every single day that goes by, we're building a backlog, that we're eliminating that backlog. If we're talking about government efficiency, building a backlog of workers complaining, or unions or employers complaining, that backlog is not anything to do with government efficiency.
Yeah, but again, you know, they basically neutered what the NLRB is. And I think, as I just spoke with Randy Weingarten a moment ago, I've been saying, you know, since probably for over a year now, that if they get control and they do what they want to do, our solutions will come out of the savagery, the suffering that they cause, eventually will wake up, and that this will give us an educational opportunity. I don't know that a lot of people know what the National Labor Relations Board does. I don't think many people know who Jennifer Abruzzo was. I was talking about her throughout the whole campaign, saying, this is the woman that I want in this position. I want Lena Khan in her position. I want Jonathan Cantor in their position. I want Julie Sue at the Department of Labor. I want these people who are doing our work to remain. They're all gone, and they're all going to be replaced with somebody who's going to be much worse. This is what I was saying. And, you know, I look now as, you know, is this an opportunity maybe to educate not just your members, but the general public of how important this little agency is?
I think it's very important to educate the people. And look, I think one of my takeaways after the election was that we have to figure out how to communicate with our members every single day. And we have to talk to them and the way they're talking on job sites, not the way that I talk around my boardroom here in Washington, D.C., not the way that the news gets published out of D.C. with acronyms. Go onto a job site right now and ask them how many people know what the NLRB stands for. They don't know it. But my job, our responsibility to educate our members and working people, is to talk to them in a language that they understand. So NLRB, yeah, I did a quick video yesterday. And I grabbed my cell phone, I got the news, and I took a 90-second, you know, quick video being like, hey, I channeled myself to, you know, back when I was on job sites every single day in September, October, and November, to be like, hey, you got a hard hat on, you got work boots on, you got a safety vest on, there's six laborers in front of you, how do you talk to them? So I grabbed that phone and said, hey, this is what the NLRB means. Forget about the acronym. It means that your protection, your rights to organize, your rights to collectively bargain are in jeopardy now because Donald Trump fired two members of the board. And there's not enough people on the board right now that can hear when an unscrupulous non-union employer is risking the lives of our members or our future members. And the avenue that we currently have is to go to the NLRB and say that they're doing these bad things. If they take that avenue away from us, they're taking our voice away from us. And none of our members, we had a lot of members that voted for Donald Trump. None of our members voted for Donald Trump to have their rights and their votes, voices taken away from them. And it's up to us to talk to our members in a way in which they're talking on the job sites for them to understand. Not that we talk down to them, but when I go on a job site and I talk about the infrastructure law or the CHIPS bill or the IRA, that's not terms that they resonate with or recognize. When I say NLRB, that's not something that they can tell me right away. Oh, that's National Labor Relations Board. And that's where we go and, file our complaints for failure to bargain or unsafe working conditions. But when I can break it down to them in a 60, 90 second video and be like, hey, look, here's just the facts. Donald Trump fired two people. Now you can't have your case heard. And every day that he hasn't replaced them means that there's a backlog that's going to take longer. We already know that it's 127 days for a case to get resolved. We already know it's 47 days, you know, for it to the first adjudication to happen. Our members don't know that, and we just need to be able to talk to them, educate, inform them, so that they understand that it can't get washed in all of this other noise that's happening in Washington, D.C. right now.
No, and it's interesting because every time I would bring the NLRB up, they're like, well, my union. They default to what you do and your contract without understanding that next step of all of that is predicated on having a functional board.
You have to. You have to. And look, not to get into too many details, but we have a real life example today. We're still going to do it. We're going to file charges against an employer who, not a organized employer, but a group of workers that we were trying to organize. You know, this employer was taking extreme safety, and putting these workers in extreme dangerous positions. And when they got hurt, we actually had a worker who was lowered down off of a multi-story building in a trash dumpster with a broken leg. And he, you know, this worker, an immigrant, doesn't speak English that great, and he was treated like a piece of trash, right? And put down in this trash dumpster, thrown in the back of a pickup truck, delivered to the emergency room, and dropped off. And never was given an employment back, never checked up on by his employer. As a non-signatory contractor, I can't go file a grievance, so the union can't step in there. But that's what the NLRB does, right? It allows for us to go and file a charge and a complaint of putting a worker in danger. Now, this worker, who we want to be a future member, doesn't have a place to have, you know, have his case adjudicated. Yeah. Unless or until the board's in a place where there's enough people that can hear it. And I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. Somebody that gets lowered down in a trash bin with a broken leg and dropped off in an emergency room, there's got to be repercussions. And this is just one that we saw because we were doing an organizing campaign there.
Yeah. So no, it's the one you workers, caught. Sure.
And workers' rights and their voices are being taken away by this action. We've got to have a board in place. We have to.
Man, disgraceful. And look, you know, all the years that I've been a union member, all the years that I've worked, I've never seen something like that. I don't know a lot of people have. Or maybe they haven't. We just haven't heard enough about them. But this is why you need to have a place to make sure that if someone does do this, that you do hold them accountable.
That's, you know, exactly. And my call, you know, in the quick video I did yesterday, you know, let's put somebody on that board as soon as possible with a workers first mentality that my members, working people, voted for you because you said you had their back. Let's not put a corporate attorney, a union busting attorney, a big boss, a billionaire on the National Labor Relations Board. Let's put somebody on there. I don't care their party affiliation, but someone, you know, who has a worker first mentality that all we want is a fair shake. Give us a fair shake. We'll win some, we lose some, but we're going to win the egregious ones. We're going to win the ones that, you know, are taking away the basic human rights. And then we got to communicate that to our members every single day to say, this is what we're doing and how we got to do it.
You hope, unless it's the guy who owns the company that lowered the guy down in the dumpster. And again, this is where my view is. And sadly, my view has been the Trump administration showed us they were not on the side of workers in the first term. And the beginning of the second term hasn't kicked off real well. I mean, his executive orders undermining federal employees' protections, undermining contractors of the federal government, their protections, preventing enforcement of union rights. There's a lot here just in that first set of executive orders that should really concern not just you, but your members and all working people.
And it's up to you, it's up to me, it's up to union leaders, it's up to working class people for us to educate working class people to say this is what's happening. And we have to narrate our own story over the next 4 years. We have to use real life examples. We have to look at, you know, I hope that we flourish. I hope this country flourishes. I hope that our members have the opportunity to go to work every day. I hope that we all have the chance for the American dream. If that dream is taken away by executive actions, congressional actions, we just have to talk about it. Yep. And we have to have discipline to talk about the facts, not our opinions, but the facts of the case. And that's what I tried to do yesterday, direct the camera, sitting in my conference room with my cell phone. The facts are Donald Trump fired two people off the NLRB, and that now we no longer have the ability to have, you know, to adjudicate cases and just talk direct to our members and not just say it once, right? We got to say it over and over again and talk, keep talking about this every day until somebody is on the NLRB that's adjudicating these cases so that that immigrant worker who is lowered down in a dumpster has the right to a fair hearing to say that this guy violated not only his human rights, but his rights as a worker on that project.
Last line of questioning I got for you. The union density numbers came out. More not good news. We're now in the single digits. I've been saying for a long time, if we're to reunite this country, We need to reunionize if we want to solve a lot of the big problems that are out there, giving workers the ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, and a standard of living. That's how we do it. Do you have any thoughts on the latest reporting?
Yeah, look, man, when the middle class is strong, unions are strong. And when union's strong, the middle class is strong. We've got to improve our density. Our numbers, not growing at the pace that I would like to, but we grew by almost 10,000 members last year. When you look at and the building trades, NABTU put out a press release today. I think that the building trades unions last year grew by almost 50,000 members. That's 50,000 stories, 50,000 yep. people. For LIUNA, that's 10,000 people who now have a shot at the middle class because they joined this union, because this union has fought for 120 years for prevailing wage, Davis-Bacon, health and safety standards, and a pathway to the middle class. I know we are hyper-focused on growth, and opportunities to sign more contractors and organize more people. And I'm proud of the fact that we grew last year by 10,000 members because we affected 10,000 lives. And multiply that by four, if it's a family of four, this union touched 40, 50, 60,000 lives that they're better off today than they were 12 months ago because they joined this union, and this union is a pathway to the middle class. So I'm proud of the work we do. You can look at numbers all day long. There's different ways you can digest numbers. I look at it very specifically. I get a weekly report of exactly where we're at, and I'm really proud of the fact that we grew by 10,000 members. And as we continue to grow and tell that story and that pathway, the best organizers we have are the 540,000 members of LIUNA that are in their community talking about how this union changed their life and how they're in their middle class because they have a union construction job or they're a public employee or a mail handler.
No, it's how I got where I'm doing what I'm doing now. It's how I got there. I still remember being an eight-year-old kid living in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. When that neighbor got that job at Ford, their lives got immediately better. They had food at the end of the month. The kids got secondhand bikes. They eventually moved out of the community altogether. So that image, that seed in my mind, union job, better life, that stuck with me, and I think it's completely accurate. But, Brent, I appreciate you taking time. I'd love to have you back again soon as all of this plays out. But good on you and your members, and keep up the great work.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks for the opportunity, man.
Brent Booker, General President of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America. I want to hear your story. You got a thought? You got something? You got one? You got like the story like me? Union job, better life? I want to hear it. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1992. That was the day the gravediggers of Chicago ended their 43-day strike. The United Press International's headline declared, "The dead will rest in peace now that Chicago area gravediggers have reached a tentative contract." The gravediggers were part of Service Employees International Union Local 106. The strike started on December 20th when workers at four Chicago area cemeteries walked off the job. At issue was wages, overtime, and health benefits. 22 other local cemeteries then locked out their workers. With the gravediggers on strike and locked out, more than 1,000 burials were delayed. The Chicago Rabbinical Society was able to get a court order for some of the burials to go forward due to Orthodox Jewish practice that requires burial within 24 hours. By the time the strike was settled, 300 burials were still waiting. Unless there is a labor dispute, grave digging is work that does not often find itself in the headlines. It is one of the many unsung types of labor that it takes to keep a big city like Chicago operating. In 1974, the famous radio host Studs Terkel published a book based on oral histories he had conducted with working people over the course of 3 years. The title of the book was simply Working. The book featured interviews that ranged from jazz musicians to pharmacists, farmers to welders. One of the most poignant interviews was with a gravedigger named Elmer Ruiz. Ruiz said, "I usually wear myself some black sunglasses. I never go to a funeral without sunglasses. It's a good idea because your eyes is the first thing that shows when you have a big emotion. Always these black sunglasses."
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So in very Trumpian style, evidently former defense secretary Mark Esper's portrait, evidently it's come down at the Pentagon somehow. And maybe, you know, one of the cleaning people stole it. You know, maybe it fell. Maybe the mice liked it. I don't know, but it's gone. And it's one of those things where you go, petty much? Answer, yes. Also, another Capitol rioter, another January 6th criminal killed. I'm starting to think they'd have been safer in jail. Evidently, a doctor whose license had been suspended after she participated in the riot on the 6th of January. Evidently, she was shot and killed. This is what happens when you point a gun at people. Evidently, they were delivering some paperwork to her home, and she pointed a gun at him. And what are you thinking? What are you thinking? I think she'd have been safer. I think she'd have been safer in jail. Look, what is this now? One arrested, two already killed. And it's only been a couple of days. This kind of January 6th criminal crime wave. This Trump crime wave, something's got to give. Something's got to give. And what's going to happen? Well, evidently Donald Trump's going to open a migrant detention center at Gitmo. Evidently we've done away with a lot of the enemy combatants. We've gotten rid of them in some places, and now we just need to fill those spaces with somebody, you know, heads in beds, I guess. But they're talking about opening a detention center to hold 30,000 migrants. And you go, you know, why is that important? Well, it's important because some 600,000 Venezuelan citizens who were given asylum here during the Biden years, Trump has now, I guess, just gone, no, we've changed our mind. So the bus is going to go after them next. And we'll see where that takes us. We'll see what, you know, my problem is, look, I say what you want about the asylum seekers and if you give them asylum or not, but does our word mean anything? And this is the question the globe is going to have to ask itself. You know, at what point does our word mean nothing? Because we're never going to stick to it. Something most certainly worth thinking about as Trump tries to completely destroy any sense of normalcy and precedent. Also, not great news for Donald Trump as he's wreaking havoc on the economy. The Federal Reserve, they're going to keep interest rates right where they are. Little worried. There had been three straight cuts since September of 2024. Worth a full percentage point. Now, little concerned. And this is one of those moments where I go, I'm waiting to see if Trump tries to fire the Fed chair. I'm waiting to see it. But the big news this week, and again, you know, as Britt and I were talking about, the idea that working people understand that coming together, joining and form unions, you know, doing things collectively to make lives better, that to me should be the central story in a lot of things. This idea that somehow Republican governance is going to get us what we need is kind of frightening. And what we've heard from a lot of people is, well, I just want the government, you know, run like a business. And this is what Trump is doing. He's giving you what you want. Now they have offered a buyout package of some sort. It's weird because not quite sure, you know, new email system, kind of what I'm being told. The Office of Personnel Management has put out this offer of if you date a resignation letter for September 30th, the thought is that they're going to pay you from now until September 30th. But, you know, as my friends over at AFGE point out, really? Is it really a buyout? Are you really getting something? You know, because it's not the voluntary separation incentive program that's already there that they could use if they chose to. No, it's not that. And do you have to work? Well, they say, I don't know, maybe in rare cases, and then they don't define what rare cases are. And there's a whole bunch of one of those things that you make you go, like any used car salesman, they're going to show you the best features. And then you don't realize that it's a chocolate covered turd until you get home. And this appears to be this buyout plan, because it doesn't give anyone any assurances that the salaries are going to continue to be funded, that people are going to be okay, that you're going to get what you think you're getting out of it. And this is one of those moments where I go, if I were a federal employee, and let's say I'm at the end of my rope, my days are coming to the end, I'm looking at retirement. You know, I was thinking about the end of the year, maybe next year. This could be an enticement to go, hey, I can not work. I can not deal with all this madness. I don't have to worry about Trump and his jackbooted thugs coming taking in over the agencies that I work in and causing harassment and all kinds of stuff. I can just go find another gig, get me to retirement. It'd be great. But it's not that. Maybe you can go find a job. Maybe you can't, because there's some language that there's some conflicts there. There's so much to this offer that, well, you'd be a fool to take it. And the big part, and as I was going to say, the big part of this for me is it's the Trump people offering it. Someone who has, throughout his career, lied, cheated, all of that. So I ask you, if Trump offers you something like this, do you put your family's security on the line? It will be interesting to see how many federal employees decide that they can't take working for the federal government anymore. That the hostility level is high, or if not higher, than most private sector jobs. It's going to be interesting to see, because I'm interested by this one. Because understand, Elon Musk and his little doji, they want to do to the federal government what they've done to Twitter and other things. They want to slash and burn. They want to cut it to the bone. They want to maximize their incentive, their profit, what they get out of it. And look, if you gut government down to nothing, how does Doge Boy and the CEO class, how do they benefit? Well, they benefit because there's no cop on the beat. There's nobody overseeing what's going on. There's nobody to hold them to account. They're going to go and they're going to fire all those IRS agents. They're insulating themselves from we the people. Because the only thing that stands in their way to absolute dominance is our government that's supposedly responsive to us. So when Trump tried we're going to freeze all the spending, everyone started calling their government agencies. Now imagine nobody is there. We're living in a really bizarre time. And as I started off with Brent Booker there, you know, Trump's first actions were to go after those federal employees. Trump's first actions were to take collective bargaining rights away, to do away with union rights and protect people who are under contracts through federal contracts. That was one of the first things he did. So if you think he cares about you or any other worker, I got bridges. I got bridges somewhere. But ultimately, we're in a weird spot, because if you've seen Trump's approval ratings, he's at 46% approval rating. That means 46% of us are happy with what he's doing. And I would argue, because it hasn't touched us yet. But I'm pretty sure it's coming. Because, simply put, the old Pastor Niemöller quote still applies for me. You know, first they came for, you named the group. And eventually they came for me. And then there'll be nobody left to speak up. This is where when the kind of chaos and the kind of stuff that we see being thrown out before us, if it goes unanswered, if it goes unchecked, it's only going to get worse. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Keep the angry emails coming, my red hat friends. I seriously want to hear. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast, freespeech.org for the video. And as always, thanks so much for being here. See you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. National Transportation Safety Board investigators say the cockpit voice and flight data recorders from the American Airlines jet hit by an Army helicopter Wednesday night at Reagan National Airport in Washington, D.C. have been recovered. President Trump suggesting DEI programs had a role.
Former President Biden's Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg responding, despicable, saying as families grieve, Trump should be leading, not lying. We put families first, drove down close calls, grew air traffic control, and had zero commercial airline crash fatalities out of millions of flights on our watch.
ABC's Mary Bruce. The government is suing to stop Hewlett-Packard's $14 billion acquisition of rival Juniper Networks. A man called Rockford, Illinois police for help, then showed them the 6-inch crossbow bolt he'd removed from his right leg, said Gabriel Colon shot him after trying to rob him, Colon in custody. This is ABC News. The Senate Judiciary Committee held a confirmation hearing for FBI Director nominee Kash Patel.